Janet, thank you for that nice introduction. Brian, Kathy, Jim, faculty, staff, class of 1960, super 60, class of 85, other reunion classes, friends and family. I will be brief, as I know President Casey and I are standing in the way of your next drink. Before I begin my remarks, I would like to recognize some very important people who are here today. Dr. Robert Farber, he was vice president of the university in 1960. Dr. John Boffman, professor emeritus of history and my faculty advisor, who tried very hard to keep me on the straight and narrow and almost did. Dr. Robert Newton, are you here, Bob? He's professor emeritus of philosophy and religion. He allowed me as an upperclassman to take a course in basic beliefs, which was very valuable to me in my international business activities. He also used to serve me a pancake breakfast on Saturday mornings to pump me about what had happened in the Board of Trustees meeting. I sometimes told him some. Dr. Clinton Gass, you're here, aren't you? Yeah. Professor Emeritus of Mathematics and John Cryer's mentor. And our very special friends, the Dean of the Music School Emeritus, Castle Grubb, and his wife, Professor Emeritus Pernice Grubb. They both mentored Barbara and me when we were students, and they mentored me and advised me when I served as the chairman of the Interlochen Center of the Arts and as a DePauw trustee. Thank you again very much. These are some of the great faculty members and administrators who taught us and guided us. One more very important person who is with us today, Dr. John Wittig. We all remember the class of 1960 that was John who had the courage to admit us to this great university and also awarded many of us rector scholarships. I want to thank our classmate Bob Gibson for bringing Dr. Wittig here today to be part of our celebration. Bob, thank you. Now I want to acknowledge my reunion committee co-chairs, Dr. Robert Mitchell. Where are you, Bob? Linda Brainerd Lewis and Maggie McElwain Kemper. I also want the rest of the committee who worked so hard to make our reunion successful to stand. Oh, come on, Brenda, you can stand. Special thanks go to Beth Bogie and Sharon Watson Wardrum for creating and editing The New Wrinkle, our outstanding reunion newspaper. By the way, the baby with me in the picture in the May issue is my granddaughter Erica at the age of 3 months. She is here today as DePauw's Tyler the Tagger. She is now a junior at IU. That was kind of an old picture. Our thanks also go to Brenda Enmeyer Stiers and Vera Ferris Dahl for their work putting together our special programs. And I have to give a hand to Steve Setchell, Capital Gifts Officer and our Reunion Committee Advisor, for his relentless and dedicated efforts to ensure we had a very successful reunion, along with the staff of the Alumni Relations Office. Finally, I want to thank the Super 60 class and President Casey for giving me the honor of speaking today and making me write this speech. But what does one say in such a speech? It's not the same as addressing new graduates whom you challenge to go out and save the world. We have accomplished most of what we are going to do, some of which gets better with the telling, if you know what I mean. In April, at Ted Kotula's memorial service in Meharry Hall, Ted's oldest daughter quoted her father as often saying, quote, "The older we get, the better we were." Now most of us are traveling, taking cruises, playing golf, or spending time with our grandchildren. In fact, listening to the chatter this week, I am reminded of the song from Annie, Get Your Gun, "Anything you can do, I can do better." Only here it is, "Anything your grandchildren can do, mine can do better." Looking at the Super 60 co-eds, I can't believe it's been 50 years since we were graduated. They have no gray hair, no wrinkles, and still alluring figures. Although I must admit my eyesight isn't what it used to be. On the other hand, we guys show at least 50 years of wear. The hair we have is gray or white. Our faces have as many lines as a Google map of the nation's capital. And our figures, let's just say they are more than ample. Congratulations to the class of 1985 for celebrating their 25th reunion. It was 25 years ago that I moved my youngest daughter into Bishop Roberts Hall, and one of your co-chairs, Matt Darnell, was on hand to not only help move her in, but return to help her hook up her stereo. By the way, Matt's father, Bob, is a member of our reunion committee and is a former trustee, and his mother, Marletta, is a co-chair of the class of 61's 50th reunion and is a current trustee. At last year's reunion convocation, President Casey told us that in his first year, he had dinner at every DePauw living unit. The last dinner was at Sigma Nu, and at that dinner, the main course was turgoosin, a turkey stuffed with the goose stuffed with the chicken. When it was served, it slid off the platter onto the floor. When it was carved, it was clear it needed much more time in the oven. Despite his great trepidation, he sampled a bite and lived to tell the story. I too had a special experience in 1985 and survived to tell the tale. Members of the class of 1985, your life as students was markedly different from those of my era. As I learned when I spent a Saturday night in my fraternity as a guest of my daughter's fraternity big brother. To say it was an eye-opening experience or an eye-closing experience for a trustee as to how college students lived in the 1980s would be an understatement. I'll leave the rest to your imagination. Brian, if you are ever invited to be an overnight guest in a fraternity, I strongly advise that you decline the invitation. Getting serious for a moment, I would like to recall some history of DePauw, which maybe you didn't know or you've forgotten, all of which can be found in Dr. Lewis Gulick's fine book, An Investment in Humanity. Then I will conclude my remarks with my personal view of why DePauw graduates, such as the Super 60 class, enjoy uncommon success, DePauw's motto and claim to fame. In 1836, the Indiana Conference of the Methodist Episcopal Church called for the establishment of, quote, "an institution of the first order equal to any college or university in the Valley of the Mississippi, close quote. Bids were sought from competing towns, including Rockville, Indianapolis, and Greencastle. Greencastle had the highest bid, $25,000, and was chosen. It was also selected, listen, because it was far enough away from Indianapolis to reduce the college student engagement in its big town temptations. At the time, Greencastle had about 500 residents. The university's charter was approved for men only by the state in 1837, and the school was named Indiana Asbury. It became co-ed in 1868. In the early 1870s, it was larger than Indiana University. East College was started in 1871 and completed in 1882. In 1878, there were major economic troubles. I guess today is not the only time, right? Washington C. DePauw came to the rescue in 1881. On June 17, 1884, Indiana Asbury ended, and DePauw University was born. It then went through a major period of expansion. A School of Music was started in 1880, School of Art in 1883, School of Law in 1884, School of Theology in 1884. Washington C. DePauw died unexpectedly in May 1887, and the financial panic of 1893 devastated his estate. Financial problems then caused DePauw to close all these schools except the School of Music and the College of Liberal Arts. The next important milestone in DePauw's life was the election of Edward Rector to the Board of Trustees on June 6, 1916. He was a very successful patent attorney in Chicago. His clients included AT&T, Firestone Tire, General Electric, and General Motors. He had been recruited to the board by Roy O. West, another successful Chicago attorney and DePauw trustee. Rector's first financial contribution was a small donation toward the construction of Bowman Gym, which was followed by the creation of the Rector Fund for Needy Students. His next major donation was for Rector Hall, which became one of the most outstanding women's dormitories in the Midwest. He and his wife made many trips to campus to oversee its design and construction. In 1919, he started the Rector Scholarship Fund, which had a value of over $1 million by the end of that year, a very significant amount of money in 1919. One of the original Rector scholars was Cohen G. Pearson, who many of us had as a history professor. Rector died unexpectedly on June 29, 1925, at the age of only 62. He is buried along with his wife, Lucy Rowland, at Forest Hill Cemetery here in Greencastle. His will provided the funds to build the dormitory that bears her name. It should be noted that Dr. Farber's master thesis in 1940 at the University of Chicago evaluated DePauw's rector scholar selection process. I, like many of you here today, benefited greatly from the Rector Scholarship Fund as it made it possible for us to attend DePauw. This great legacy continues today. Now I will address why I believe DePauw graduates enjoy uncommon success no matter what field of endeavor they choose. Of course, they master the key principles in their disciplines, but like a great sports team, it is superior execution of fundamentals that brings success. It is three simple things we were all taught and learned better than most. First, we learned to read with real comprehension. We understood fully the message in the written word. Second, we learned to write clearly so others could easily understand the message we intended to convey. Third, we learned to listen critically to fully understand what others were saying. This lesson is the one, based on my own experience, many people educated at other fine institutions never learned. How many times have you been in a discussion with someone who wasn't really listening to the point you were trying to make, but rather was thinking about the next point he or she wanted to make? Successful oral communication requires a two-way street. You need to listen as well as to speak. There is one more thing I believe contributes to our uncommon success. Whether it was in the classroom, the lab, at chapel, in our living units, or in athletics, we learned the importance of being ethical and honest and to respect the rights and feelings of others. Another lesson many others seemed not to have learned. My friends, superior reading, writing, and listening, along with real respect for others, these are what I believe gave the Super 60 DePauw class uncommon success. I am happy to report that today, I believe these are still what DePauw students learn and will give that them, including the class of 2010 and future classes, uncommon success. May God bless you, your families, your loved ones, and may God bless DePauw University.